If you love the national parks as much as we do, then we have a book recommendation for you.
Moon USA National Parks Hiking is a brand new guidebook from Moon Travel Guides that covers the top 100 hikes across 40 U.S. national parks.
Whether you want to descend into the Grand Canyon, stroll the shoreline in Acadia, or cling to the cliff edges in Shenandoah, Moon USA National Parks Hiking gives you the inspiration to find the perfect hike for you and the practical planning tips to make it happen. You'll find everything from easy, family-friendly hikes to strenuous, multi-day treks, plus tips for wildlife watching, backpacking, finding solitude, and more.
This book is an essential resource for National Parks fans, as well as a fantastic holiday gift for any outdoorsy people on your list.
You can find Moon USA National Parks Hiking wherever books are sold, or click the link in our show notes. And if you don't already have a copy on your shelf, be sure to also check out the original award-winning best-selling guide that started it all, Moon USA National Parks.
Find your trail and prepare for an unforgettable journey in America's top national parks with Moon Travel Guides. Moon, let your heart be your compass. Let Moon be your guide.
You can try to resist, try to hide from his kiss, but you know you can't fight the moonlight.
Almost. Those were pretty much the lyrics section of the song. Good job.
All right. Well, it's been a minute, right?
It's been a minute because at the end of the night, you can't fight the moonlight.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to know that she's doing stand-up and having a flourishing career at this point.
Oh, my God. Okay, we have to talk about this. Recently, Leanne Morgan launched her sitcom on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I just watched Leanne Morgan's special. It's so funny. And her sitcom is so funny. And then separately.
Yeah.
In a conversation 2 days later, you come to the conversation and say,
oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to supply it for me.
No.
I say, so I think I heard that Leanne Rimes is doing stand-up now and has a sitcom.
And you were like, and like Jerry Seinfeld mentored her. And I was like, that is literally Leanne Morgan.
I was fed this information by somebody else, though.
You were.
Uh-huh. And I bought it hook, line, sinker.
You were.
I was like, wow, Leanne Rimes, what a career shift.
Well,
I mean, I need to see it.
She's multifaceted and multi-talented.
Now I would like
She probably could, but now I'm curious what that would look like. But yeah, no, what was your relationship with the movie Coyote Ugly?
Oh, I mean, that was like a movie that was like middle school, high school. I remember I thought it was fun. We had Piper Perabo. We had all the girls at the bar. They had their own personalities. Piper Perabo sings one way or another and like causes the bar to stop having a brawl. I mean, this is like 90s camp movie, like quality happening all over the place. She wants to be a singer. And then they're like, well, you'll just sing at the bar every night because everybody loves you. Yeah. Melanie Lynskey is in it. It's like one of her first films.
I did not know that.
She's like her best friend.
I know.
Yeah.
John Goodman. I don't know because this is unfortunately for me a film I haven't seen. No. And what a gift I'm waiting for, gay canon,
I feel like.
And the thing that I find funny is like I was such a huge fan of Leanne Rimes growing up. Still am. Love her stand up. Love everything she's up to. I'm just like I show up, I ride, you know, but
I laugh.
I have not seen Coyote Ugly.
Well, it
like,
is a gift.
Like as the like a film.
Oh, it's quite
I remember
a gift.
When it came out because it was high school for me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think it was early high school for me. Maybe middle. I don't know. Whatever.
I don't remember when.
Yeah. When we were young.
But it came out sometime around then.
Yeah.
I remember everybody seeing it, but I did not.
There was that cute Australian guy, too. That was like, that's where I feel like I had like a moment of awakening in that moment.
Oh, I see.
From Coyote Ugly.
And you said, I need to travel to Australia.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sail. stars. Get up when the stars still fill the sky. Don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real. You can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park. At the national park. At the national park. Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting and hiking the land also known as Death Valley National Park, we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Kowaisu and Western Shoshone people.
We had just arrived in Nevada and California via Ash Meadows.
That's right.
Which is managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. And we did some small boardwalk and paved trails and experiences here at Ash Meadow.
That's right. Mm-hmm. In what we called pupfish trails in the last episode.
Yeah.
And so now we're headed into Death Valley proper.
Yes. And so we were camping at the Furnace Creek campground, which we had sort of kind of teased out when we had arrived at the end of our last episode. We'd stopped by the visitor center. We had seen the sign that read 103 degrees.
Because as you know, something that's named Furnace Creek is probably
hot,
freezing.
We proceeded past the visitor center to the next exit or the next road, which was the entrance to the campsite. So we could walk to the visitor center from our campsite, but because of timing, we wanted to make sure that we stopped there first because we were about closing time. When we went in, there were a few loops in the campsite.
Our campsite is also very close to a bathroom, so we've got sinks and bathrooms nearby. Typically, they give you those little caddies for your
NPS pass.
Yeah, to hang in your window, but they were like, don't do that because it'll melt.
Yeah, they're like, don't leave it on the dashboard. Don't do any of that. They basically would give out pieces of slips of paper that you would hang in the dashboard, but they're like, we're out of those.
Because of budget.
Because of budgeting.
Freezes.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah. So they were like, well, we're like, what do we do? And they're just like, just, you're fine. Just like, make sure you're parked where you're supposed to be parked. So we've camped in national parks before and in other spaces. Obviously, we had just, if you listened to our last episode, camped at Lake Mead. But this is the first time that we're really, truly doing a full camp setup with Becky and Cynthia. It's clear that they have things down to a science here when it comes setting up. Yeah.
Because from backing in the camper, from the way they park, from setting things up. So we sort of jumped right into that process.
Yeah, we had to learn how to essentially level the trailer and how to set it up properly using wedges under the tires. Backing the trailer in is definitely quite a science. I think that's probably the hardest. Did you have to back in at all?
I think I did once, and it was like pivot points, a lot of pivot points.
Yeah, and then we had to, there are legs on the trailer, the camper trailer, that we had to kind of put down. Becky has a very unique camper in that it's got a pitched roof.
Yeah, it's a pop-up camper, but it pops up to an angle.
Yeah, it's very different. There were a lot of comments anytime we were near the trailer, like, that's such a neat like camper. We don't see campers like that. Mm-hmm. Usually it's a flat roof, like with an accordion, or a lot of the times it is. We kind of need to do our tent setup. One of the first things we do is we move the picnic table from a very large open area to a spot that's in the shadow of the car. So
that's
so that we could
sit and eat in the shade rather than in the direct sun.
Yeah, and we put the camp chairs there too, so it was a little easier for us.
And there are some trees here. This wasn't like a completely open, barren area. So we could have some shaded areas a little bit.
Right, but they were low trees, nothing like super duper tall here.
As we were setting up the tent, it was pretty windy. We were like, oh, just like last night, let's not put up the rain fly. Let's leave the rain fly off. It'll help.
It'd be cool.
Move air through a little bit more.
Yeah.
Little did we know.
Yeah. Yeah, this also meant the world could see
into
our tent. All of them. We did have to weigh the tent down with a lot of things so the tent wouldn't just blow off. We tried to stake into the ground here, but it was not really working at all.
No.
We did have like some things kind of on top of the stakes. Like we found rocks that we could also put on top of the stakes.
Large rocks to put on top of.
Because the stakes didn't really want to drive in all the way because it was very tough. with our mattresses and our bags in the tent, it kind of, we were pretty sure that we would be fine. We do set up our sleeping bags and pillows also in the tent so that we don't have to do any of this later. We blow up the air mattresses, we get everything going so that like when we're ready to go to bed, we can just get right in the tent and it's not an issue. There are a lot of other campers in the campsite, but there are also some other tent campers like us. Most people, I would say here, were in trailers.
RVs, trailers.
It was like
that.
Very, very heavy trailer.
And some of the tents that were around were very big. And ours was made for four people and pretty low to the ground. That first evening, we make dinner. Since we had flown in, Becky and Cynthia were very kind to have picked up all the necessary groceries and prepped some dinners prior to us arriving, keeping them cool in the cooler. Becky believes in real food camping.
Oh, yeah.
So rather than dehydrated food, we had real food. And that was a matter of making sure to keep things cold. So we were constantly getting more ice the whole time.
We were.
But we did fall into a good rhythm here between us making dinner, making lunch for the next day, packing packs and making breakfast for the next day, which is always overnight oats done in reusable
Talenti jars.
Talenti containers.
Not a sponsor.
No, but
it's a great jar, use of the jar.
That's right. Uh-huh. They aren't stackable, but they are great for overnight oats.
That's true.
So the outdoor sinks were very nearby and they were great for being able to wash dishes, wash hands,
fill water bottles,
brush teeth, all of those things.
Yeah.
So that we didn't have to necessarily go to the bathroom every time. And also campsites are pretty good about trying to have sinks that are not in the bathroom so that you're not doing that.
You're not washing food down the bathroom sink where you're also brushing teeth and washing hands and whatnot.
Correct. And what started to happen as we were making dinner?
It got very windy. As we started to continue to work to prep dinner, the wind was kind of super nuts. I've never seen wind like that. We had basically started to eat and had to gather all the food, rush into the trailer to eat because it was that much of a windstorm. The beds that are in the camper can convert to tables, but we just sat on top of the beds and like finished dinner in there.
Yeah.
And just ended up talking and gabbing.
Okay. So similar to last season's moment of sheer panic from Mike when it came to tide timing in Olympic National Park, we want to make sure that we were timing out things here in Death Valley very intentionally when it came to sunsets and the moon, because sunsets are beautiful to watch here. Also, we wanted to make sure that sunsets had clouds because we wanted to see the light through the clouds. And also, when it came to the moon, Death Valley is a dark sky park, and so we wanted to be able to actually see some stars. But when the moon is out, often you don't. We ran into that situation in Black Canyon of the Gunnison, where we went up to try and see stars, but alas, there were no stars.
I feel like it's been more than just Black Canyon. I feel like there have been so many dark sky parks or dark sky adjacent areas that we've tried to go to, and most of the trips that we take, it's like, oh, it's a full moon right now, and that was the case.
Well, honey, you always bring the full
moon. That's right, because we can't fight the moonlight.
That's it. That's right.
That's the theme of this episode.
No, you can't
fight it. It sure is.
It's going to get to your heart.
Uh-huh. But yeah, we arrived and it was on this day, the exact full moon. We were like, well, we're not going to see any sort of dark sky tonight, but the moon was rising like an hour later each successive night. So we're like, maybe that last night we'll be able to do some dark sky gazing, which we ultimately ended up able to do. We also were hoping that for the sunset, we would get to Zabriskie Point, which is what we had passed on the way in, because it's a really great spot to see sunset. If there's clouds like there were this evening, it's beautiful because light and the color off of the clouds is really incredible.
But now everything was thrown off because of the windstorm. We definitely did not make sunset at Zabriskie Point, which was fine. We could do that another time later in the week. What was interesting about the moon this night was that it was going to be a very early rise for the full moon. So this was the night that we decided to utilize moonlight to walk out to Badwater Basin, which is another spot in Death Valley National Park.
This would have been not a great idea to do during the day because it's very hot and very exposed unless you're there very early. And even then, it may not have been what we would wanted to have done. There's other spots that we could get to. The idea of being guided by the moon was very cool, especially because we weren't going to be able to stargaze. The kind of the cool thing was, I think people do this even when the moonlight isn't as strong as it is, but we would not need to do headlamps. Like, we wouldn't have to do a headlamp hike. This was like a really cool idea to just have the moonlight as our guide. The only thing we were a little concerned about was the wind, but we decided to kind of chance it.
So when we arrived, Becky had given you and me the spare key to the car so that you and I, or she and Cynthia, could both have access to the car whenever we needed. I'm just going to say this right here. Camping, which I have learned, is about tiny little very important things. I find that it helps me to keep all of them in the same place. Mm-hmm. So while I did not do this day, the very next day I bought a fanny pack and I wore that fanny pack every single day.
Yep. You kept your keys and your dignity in there.
That's right. The car key was in there. Wallet, phone, charger, backup battery, all of my cables, anything that was small and very important went into the fanny pack. Mm-hmm. And I wore it at all times, mm-hmm. except on the trail, because then I took the fanny pack and put it inside my pack. And then I would just switch it back out. Pack and packs, mm-hmm. the whole time. And I found that to be very helpful because I don't like to lose track of tiny little things.
So I am going to be the driver on this evening to Badwater Basin. And we have to pull out of the Furnace Creek campground and drive past the ranch, which is, it's like a very expensive resort in the desert, essentially. Look into it if you're not into camping, but it is pricey. We take this road essentially all the way out to Badwater. Now, it is a slow drive because it is very, very dark.
So dark.
While the moon is rising early, it's really not, it hasn't crested over anything yet. It just has come up on the horizon, but we are in a bowl, basically, surrounded by mountains. So we're not seeing the moon proper just yet. The wind is blowing the car around, too, which is always fun to be driving and having the wind push the car. Not great. The one thing that was nice was that there weren't a lot of other cars on the road and not a lot of other cars when we arrived at Badwater.
We pull into the parking area for Badwater Basin, which is pretty large, and we can see through the car lights that there is a dim light on the flats, which was great, and that there's a ramp that leads down to the salt flats as a way to like access them on foot. We get out of the car and the wind is incredibly aggressive. Mm-hmm. So we definitely like take another moment to think about this. We said, okay, so we could walk out, and if worse came to worst, when it came to wind, we could just turn around. So we decide that we will deal with the wind and that there probably won't be much sand blowing around here on the salt flats. So we open up the back of the car so that we can change shoes. And in that moment, my ballet flats, which are shoes that I mentioned in the last episode, they are not actual ballet flats. They are like flat
shoes.
They're little
plimsolls.
They're what?
Plimsoll.
Is that what we'd call that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. They're little flat shoes. I wear them often to the beach, but I always bring them camping because I always feel like I just want a pair of shoes that lives at camp that if I so I can use them around and not bring them into the tent kind of thing and leave other shoes like in a car. So we open the back of the car and my ballet flats flew away.
And you ran screaming into the night.
And I ran screaming into the night.
And with that, let's take our first break.
Hey, Mike, you know what I was thinking?
What?
Whether we're hiking trails in national parks or camping, it's so important for us to have a really good cup of coffee in the mornings.
Oh my God, it's the thing that gets us up and gets us going, for sure. And if you haven't tried AeroPress coffee yet, you're in for a treat. AeroPress uses a completely unique brew method, and because of that, you get a delicious cup of coffee that you can only get with AeroPress.
And it's a coffee maker that you can take with you wherever you go, and it doesn't break, and it isn't bulky.
AeroPress combines the best qualities of a few coffee brewing methods into one brewer. A little French press, a little pour over, a little espresso, because it takes the best of all three. It just might be the best cup of classic coffee you'll ever drink.
AeroPress was designed to fit your lifestyle. Unlike other brewers, you can take this exceptional coffee anywhere you go and along with any activity you do. Compact, durable, reliable, delicious.
And it's convenient too. It's the fastest single cup coffee maker out there. 2 minutes to brew and clean.
AeroPress is shockingly affordable, less than $50, and we've got an incredible offer for our listeners. Visit aeropress.com/gaze. That's aeropress.com/gaze, GAZE. Again, that's promo code GAZE, GAZE, for 20% off your order. y'all. It's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails! It's time to play One Letter Change. This is a game that we have played many times before. It is a game where
there are two words next to each other that we're trying to get the other person to guess. And the only difference is that there's only one letter that's different. So you're trying to guess a two-word phrase based on a clue where the two words are the same, save for one letter.
Great. Thank you. All right. Here's the first one. A British gentleman who doesn't have any money.
Oh.
Or what?
Is this now, hold on. Yeah. Is this like one, now are we switching a letter or have we just removed a letter in
no,
this
situation?
No, it's
a switch.
Because I was going to say cheap chap.
Oh, I like that.
Which works, but that's one letter. Uh-huh.
That's one letter removed.
One letter removed. And this is
no,
one letter
change. No, it's a common word that someone might use to say man or dude or bro.
Bloke?
Yep.
Okay, broke bloke.
There you go.
Okay, got mm-hmm. it. Okay, great.
Here's the next one. This bullet-shaped building on a farm, usually used to house grain, that's actually filled with a different soil type that's often found in rivers.
Oh, okay. Well, I know it's silo, mm-hmm. but I'm like, is it phyllo silo? Mm-hmm. It's not phyllo. That's the type of dough that you use to make pastries.
I don't even think that's spelled that way.
And it's not spelled that way, correct?
No.
Oh, God. Is it...
I came hard this morning, apparently.
Is it Milo dough? Milo silo? I don't know.
What's silo silt?
Silo silt.
Yeah. I know it's not a rhymer, which are...
Got it.
They're
it's
tricky.
Not a rhymer. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay. And here's
that
the last
one. That was really
one.
Good. That was really good.
So this would be a short word for someone who's fancy, ostentatious, glittery, if they also happen to be a grandmother, and the shortened word that you might use to describe them.
Is it a... No. Is it a glam gram?
That's right. You got it.
Look at that. And look at that.
And that's one letter change.
I might have also described that one as like a really, really fabulous small weight measurement.
That could have been that.
A glam gram.
Yeah, it could have been that.
Okay, so what did it sound like when I need you to do it because I cannot recreate it. I did not experience from the outside what I did, but I do want to say in this moment, for my own dignity, is that this was a completely visceral response, and it was completely genuine. Nothing about it was pushed, forced, or performative. This was completely right, like, out of my feelings.
Authentic.
Completely authentic. So what exactly happened? I want you to describe it. I want you to describe it, and then I want you to impersonate what I said. No, that no, but I screamed the phrase "my ballet flats."
You did.
I did. And so what did it sound like?
My ballet flats.
It was higher than typical.
My ballet flats.
And to describe the moment, y'all, I mean, this was
they literally flew
into
flight.
The air, and I mean, like, arcing into the air. Mm. And like
The parking lot's big.
The parking lot is big, and they flew, and it's so dark, and they're like, and I thought in that moment that I had lost them forever. Uh-huh. And I was, I'm not going to lie, very devastated I was like, these shoes have already in the 2 days that we've been out and about around here. Well, 1 day that we've been out and about around here.
Yeah, this is still day one.
They've already served me in so many ways. So in the moment, I was forced to make a decision. I was like, I either grieve the fact that they're gone right now in this moment
for my life,
or I run after them like they are my children.
I ran
after them like they were my children.
You Sophie's choice for them.
I abandoned the car where other things were about to fly out.
Oh, yeah.
And I ran after my ballet flaps.
The wind was aggressive. I've never seen wind like this.
No, as in like pushing our bodies.
Yeah.
And so I ran after them into the night. And by into the night, I mean into the parking lot.
Into the unknown.
In the dark, because I did not have a light source.
No.
I
found me flats.
I found both of them.
You did.
But they were fully hundreds of feet away now.
You got there.
But I did. I got them.
Yeah. They took off.
I was like, if they end up in the middle of the road, that's it. I'm not walking into the middle of the road to try and find them.
So we wanted to take a little bit of time. In episodes past, we've obviously used our trail mixes to kind of dive deeply into information that relates to a specific land mass or a specific type of landscape that we haven't really encountered yet. But it felt a little bit more natural for this episode for information on salt flats to kind of nest here in the middle of our episode. And this is also important because it's not the only salt flat or salt area that we would see in Death Valley. And we'll talk more about the wild weirdness of what Devil's Golf Course is in a future episode, because that is completely different, but also salt formed.
Correct.
Right.
And this was not your first salt flat experience. You've had one before when you were in Bolivia.
I have.
Tell us about that privileged experience.
Yeah, there it is. Mm-hmm. I've been to the biggest salt flat in the world, which is in Uyuni, in Bolivia. So this was a trip that I took in 2013. It was a 5-week trip that included Peru, Bolivia, and Chile. I had been in Peru for about a week and a half and then was in Bolivia for maybe 5 days, maybe a little bit longer. Had done a trip to the salt flats in Uyuni. It's sort of like it's one of the main things to do. It's a big attraction to see. You have to take from La Paz an overnight bus that takes you to the flats. Well, takes you to like a kind of a border town to the flats where then your salt flat tour starts. The bus ride was extremely bumpy because you're not on paved road. You got there and one of the buses that was in this fleet of like 2 or 3 buses completely broke down. So we had to stop in the middle of the night to try to like assist.
Oh, so you lost your ballet flats too.
And by ballet flats, I mean a whole bus.
Huh? Yeah. Seems.
We arrived in the morning very early and we took a salt flat tour. The tour was an overnight. You ended up staying in a salt hotel, like completely made out of salt. But you basically were driven around through the flats. We ended up going to a village where they work to refine salt and harvest lithium, because this is one of the biggest areas of lithium production in the world. Yeah, you really got to like, there's a lot of, if you've probably seen photos of people on the flats, and because there's not a lot of depth here, people are doing things like making things in the frame look a lot larger, and like people in the way background look a lot smaller, and so it looks like people are holding people up. There's plenty of photo trickery that you can do here on the salt flats. The flats also get rain sometimes, so it becomes like a giant mirror. Same thing happened with Badwater Basin and Death Valley when Hurricane Helene came through. That was something I think we were both sort of hoping we'd be able to see when there was water on the flats and water throughout the park, because it was like a lake again.
It was. It was. And so based on what you experienced there and what you experienced here in Death Valley, how would you say those compared?
Uyuni is gigantic. It is. It took a whole day to tour around, and then basically we stayed the night and did some more touring the following day. Like, I'd need to like dig back into photos, and I have them, but this was a much more condensed experience, I would feel like. Plus, it wasn't something that you were being toured around on. It was self-guided, but it was nevertheless still very cool.
So with that, let's talk some context about the types of salt formations. So specifically salt pans, salt flats, and salt marshes. One thing is key in all these landforms, and that is water, or in the case of salt pans and salt flats, which are often interchangeable, the fact that there was once water. So let's first talk about salt marshes. So salt marshes are an incredible ecosystem that is important to a variety of life, including seabirds, fish, and shellfish. Salt marshes are typically found in areas where fresh and seawater meet, which is otherwise known as a brackish zone. What kind of zone?
Brackish.
A mix of both types of, these waters, salt and fresh. Salt marshes build sediment and salinity through tidal action and the flow of rivers over time. And these spaces vary in salinity based on what the brackish zone is like and how the different types of waters mix.
When it comes to salt pans or salt flats, these areas of land occur in desert landscapes. The salt flats of Uyuni in Bolivia are the largest salt flats in the world. The key to the creation of salt flats, other than the desert landscape, is that these spaces were once lake beds. Over thousands of years, these areas became drier, and the lake beds that were inside these environments evaporated. In the wake of this evaporation, minerals were left behind, including salt. Over time, these spaces developed a hard, crusty surface, and other anomalies within these spaces may have developed as well, like the polygonal patterning that you can see on Badwater Basin. Sometimes, depending on rain or flooding, as was the case for Badwater Basin after Hurricane... I kept saying Hurricane Helene. It's Hurricane Hillary. I said it in the other episode, too.
Well, we're going to quickly offer a corrections corner here. Anytime we've said Hurricane Helene, we've meant Hurricane Hillary.
Uh-huh. In 2023, after Hurricane Hillary, salt pools or solution pits may have formed where the water had dissolved. Along with the source for the salts and the arid climate to evaporate the water, a closed drainage basin is important for these flats or pans to form.
Now let's talk Badwater Basin specifically. Death Valley has an arid climate with less precipitation than evaporation. It has a closed drainage basin, which is 9,000 square miles and is larger than the state of New Hampshire. And it has a source for the salt. Originally, the area that is now Badwater Basin, about 200 square miles, was once a lake, Lake Manly, named for one of the original white explorers of the region. This lake existed in what is now the confines of the park 10,000 to 11,000 years ago. As a lake with no outlet, closed drainage system, when the more active weather pattern of the region shifted, the lake began to dry in earnest. And over the centuries, the lake was fed with rich mineral deposits from the surrounding ranges, which create this closed drainage system. These mountains fed the lake through rain and snowmelt, and as they still do today when precipitation graces this region. When looking at the ranges from above or at a distance, you can see the runoff that carries into the basin. These are typically called alluvial fans, and they're incredible to see. And they are areas where runoff from the mountainous regions meet the valley floor.
Over time, these rains brought rich deposits of sodium chloride, or salt, calcite, gypsum, and halite to Lake Manly, as they still do today, in instances of heavy rain or melt. These deposits, which once fed Lake Manly, were the mineral remnants of the lake, which evaporated over an extremely long period of time. Eventually, this formed what is Badwater Basin over thousands of years. The thing to remember about these spaces, salt flats and salt pans, is that even though they seem dead or inactive, they are constantly changing, like the shifting sands of the desert itself. While the hardened flats may not shift as fast as sand, wind, rain, and other factors impact the way in which these flats shift over time.
And with that, let's take our next break. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Adele Taco.
Adele Taco. Mm-hmm. Okay, this was inspired by Adele Taco.
Adele Taco.
Not a sponsor. And we never actually even went to Adele Taco.
And they're apparently the superior fast food chain for tacos.
Really?
I think they outrank Taco Bell.
According to whom? I don't know.
According to the internet.
According to culture?
Yeah, I think according to culture.
We don't have any Adele Tacos East Coast.
No, West Coast thing.
West Coast. And so we did not get to eat there, but Adele Taco is, okay, so who is Adele Taco?
Well, I do feel like Adele Taco is obviously an Adele-inspired queen.
Interesting. Okay, so, because I was like, it's really hard to use that name without being a reference to the British singer-songwriter,
I think
Adele.
It would be tricky. So I do feel like maybe she does parodies of Adele songs that are food-based. Doesn't have to be all tacos.
I like that. Uh-huh. Okay, uh-huh. Maybe she's making food while while she's singing mm-hmm. these songs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I set fire to the pan. Watched that. It burn.
There you go. I like that. I was thinking like, never mind, I'll find some gravy like you. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm into this. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So she's the kitchen queen.
She's the kitchen queen.
She
yeah.
cooks. Maybe. Yeah. I like the idea of her like cooking.
I think it's dinner theater.
It's dinner theater.
She's
and you're
cooking
eating
the meal.
It live. And or she's cooking it
she's
live.
She's prepared
and
ahead of
it.
Time. And then she gives you a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen shows like that where food is being prepared live and then they're giving people food. Like, and it's part of a whole narrative.
Yeah. I think it could be fun. And she could also be doing, she could be making on stage and singing, and then people are plating things for, she's got like a team of people that are like plating and handing out things.
I feel like the team could also be an extension of her. Maybe it's like, I don't know, maybe there are other impersonators who are British singers that also she went to school with. Like, because Adele famously went to that school in London for, you know, the arts school, but like a lot of other people went there.
Did Amy Winehouse go with
her? She did.
Yeah.
She did. She was older than her.
Right.
But yes, she did. They both went to the same school.
Yeah.
I don't know. That might be a little bit of a stretch. In a
well, but Amy could be the sommelier. If you had an Amy Winehouse impersonator.
Amy
and she could
Winehouse.
Sing, I Drink Wine with Adele.
There it is.
It's a duo.
We'll bring Amy back for that moment.
We will.
Oh my God, that's a great idea.
Listen, marketing. Let's go.
And synchronicity. Alignment.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think that's her repertoire as Adele songs, and I think it's all kind of food-based. Her merch is, there's no merch. It's the experience and it's the dinner that you're getting, or the meal, but most likely a dinner.
I like that.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage
Adele Taco.
I'm running after the shoes.
I'm dead. I have fully died on the ground of Badwater Basin laughing.
Well,
you,
we're still in the parking lot, so you're not on the basin, but we're in the parking
lot. Might as well be. Right.
And yes, I was able to catch them.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we decided to put on boots for this because this, thank God we did.
Oh,
because the salt flats are, they are not like a kind of super flat.
There's a cragginess to them, but
terrain.
It's more of an issue of getting salt on a shoe that you don't want it to be on.
Yeah.
And the boots are going to be walking on all different sorts of surfaces. So putting them, you know, on the ground in the salt flats to have a little bit more leverage was definitely a little bit better. And they'd be easier to clean in the long run, but they also definitely made a mess of things in the car. The salt was not easy to get out of the car.
That is very true. It
so,
was not.
Just a
so everybody think just be thinking about that.
Have good plastic mats or good mats down that can deal with that. Yeah.
Ballet flats retrieved and secured, and we decided it was time to like get ready to go. So again, the parking lot is really large, and right along the parking lot you can see out and really get a great view of the flats.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way to pull in during the daytime to be able to see them if walking out there isn't your journey. And then there's also that central ramp that leads right into mm-hmm. them. So we stand at the ledge, and
I think I see a small child like on the ramp. And it freaked me out. And
that's right.
It turned out to just be a Ballard.
A ghost.
Yeah. It turned out to be a Ballard and not the one that's sitting across from
that's
me
right, right.
now.
That's right. No, mm-hmm. it was. And what is a Ballard for those of us who don't use
a Ballard is like a partition, like usually on the side of a road. It's usually a column that's metal, could be stone, that like is essentially a blocker so cars can't drive on that surface.
Exactly.
Usually looks decorative. Doesn't have to.
So are we shocked that this Ballard needs to be here in this spot?
No.
No, because I'm sure that people would drive their cars onto the basin.
Oh, they sure would.
If they were
if they could.
It, right.
Yeah. The because ramp is wide enough for cars.
People are menaces. So so there are a few cars parked here, but we don't really see anybody who's like gone out onto the flats. Mm-mm. So we do decide to journey out.
So part of the charm about going out onto the flats this evening was that we wouldn't need our headlamps, as previously mentioned. You could obviously go out onto the flats in the evening, but unless the moon was full or very near full, a headlamp would probably protect you from totally eating it and falling on the flats. Because there are some pitfalls that can happen to you. We'll talk about that in a second. Full moon was going to be our guide. So even though it was incredibly windy, we were very excited. That being said, and despite the fact that the moon was supposed to be up earliest this night, we definitely ran into some problems when it came to lighting.
There was a big range in front of the flat where we were, and the moon had not quite gotten over that range of mountains yet. But we could tell when we got further out onto the basin that there was moonlight behind there because it was starting to get bright in that area, just like the moon had not fully come up yet.
And there was moonlight on the range, also on the mountains on the other side of Badwater Basin and on the flats itself because they had a light glow to them.
So yeah. Basically we were in shadow and we weren't quite in the moonlight
right yet. Right.
But we walk out a bit and the wind is at our backs, but this isn't terrible. It actually helps push us along a little bit, which we know will mean that we will likely be fighting the wind on the way back. Not that we were looking forward to it, but
There's always trade-offs, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. So there's some people that are a little further out that we see. We can tell that there is not much illumination out there, and some people do have headlamps and flashlights. And this initial walk out from the ramp leads us down to a mostly... The first part feels a little like enclosed by mountains on either side. And then as we walk further out, it sort of gets more exposed. But we have to keep walking in order to get to there.
Yeah, because this was more of an experience than a hike, we had the ultimate say in when we wanted to turn around. And part of this was dependent on A, seeing the moon crest over the range, B, the fact that we needed to go to bed not too late as we needed to do our hikes very early because of the heat this week. We did have some extenuating circumstances that were going to really decide how far we were going and how much we were staying here or how late we were staying.
Now, I had with me my DSLR camera, but this was entirely too dark, way too dark to get anything from this DSLR camera. And my phone with the camera on it was dead. So I had no way to take photos.
Right. But my phone, for like the first time in my life, actually was taking very, very good photos.
It's true.
And you were pissed.
Well,
you were
mad. I can't believe I don't have any way to take any photos. But it was, I was glad that you were able to get some.
Right. And I had only known that it was good at taking night photos because I had been in Joshua Tree a few weeks before and had gone out while it was dark sky-y and was able to get some incredible photos of the stars. And the fact that yours wasn't working definitely was a point of contention for you.
Well, you were able to take photos and also Cynthia was able to take photos.
Right.
But let's talk about people taking photos of you.
Me? Just yes. Me?
Well, of us. We were both in these
photos. I let the evidence show that there have been many photo shoots where, no, that angle doesn't work. We need to do it again.
Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. And that is in favor of, you know, not every photo nails it.
No, it's true.
It's true. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when other people, third parties, take photos of you, I have learned that most of the time, 98% of the time, those photos are not going to look great.
Right.
Because they are not thinking about anything or at your angles, and there's nothing you can do about any of it.
No.
And I'm not trying to necessarily be like a total egoist about this, but like,
you sure?
Let's all be clear. We want to put our best foot forward in our photos if we can. And so, you know, we learn a little bit about, okay, actually, this is going to look a little better from this side.
Right.
Or if the lighting, like we're standing in front of the lighting or behind the lighting, we need to adjust so that it looks a little bit better. All that stuff. But tell me about your experience in this while we were out on the salt flats.
Well, I just felt attacked.
Okay. And why did you feel attacked?
And I know how you feel now.
Thank you.
When you're like, I need this to be taken again from this angle.
That's right.
It definitely was not a flattering.
Okay. So what happened? Talk us through
it. I looked very bloated.
No. Like, start.
I felt abused.
No, start at the beginning.
Well, it's a very good place to start, apparently. We were out on the flats. We had eaten dinner. We were full.
Oh,
of dinner.
God.
What do you want from me?
Keep going.
You wanted me to start at the beginning.
Keep going.
We're walking out. We are photographing what we can in the dim lighting. The cameras are only so good. You have to hold very still. Otherwise, things get kind of rocky, shaky.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look good. And there were some photos that were taken of me that I felt personally victimized by.
There it is, right there. Photos taken by Some other people in our group who we won't name, but
It's like, let's figure that out. Deduce.
And
it wasn't intentional.
It was like, not intentional. No, it was definitely like, this is great. Let me just take some photo. Right. It was a coming from a completely pure, beautiful place. Yeah. But of course, we're allowed to have our opinions and thoughts about it. And feelings about it.
But
I felt like they looked great.
Oh, there it is. I felt like everything was fine.
You were unhappy with how things turned out.
Because usually I'm just like, that's fine. I'm happy with that. I don't have a problem. But I felt like my best self was not being displayed. And so I had a moment of humble pie from you.
From me?
Yeah, I was eating your humble pie.
I see. Just like generally speaking.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I get it. I get why he's like this now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Because sometimes we work really hard and we have goals for ourselves and we want our
those
goals
illusions
to
are
be
shattered
on display. And
like
sometimes
mirrors.
Those illusions are shattered. Well, you know what? Listen, you know, like there's a reason nobody can capture the sun in a photo. It's mm-hmm. just too
bright and beautiful.
Too bright and beautiful.
As we continue to walk out, we are on pretty flat territory. The one thing we had to be mindful of is holes that were in the flat. So these were interesting because they also had some water in them. Definitely didn't want to twist an ankle this early in the trip, so we basically had to keep our eyes down unless we were stopping. Even though it was a full moon, there were still pretty good stars out here.
I would agree.
Good light, despite the moon having not crested over this ridge. And this ridge would be something we would return to days later.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That ridge would come back mm-hmm. later. We could see from out here how the light was getting over the ridge, but it was just not quite, we were not quite getting a full moon here.
Yeah. No, nothing.
The further we got out, the range was looking brighter and brighter in that one area. So we knew the moon would eventually be up behind there.
But
we also passed some folks out here. They were in picnic blankets. Some had their dogs with them.
Mm-hmm.
We keep walking out and eventually we get into a more open area of the flats where the ridges of the mountains and the washes and the alluvial fans just like don't extend. So we're now in an area that's like even flatter and a little more open.
Yeah. And this is where we see more of those polygonal formations where there are cracks that are in the surface that are forming them. And these desert ripples are sort of an iconic part of Badwater Basin. And it took us quite a while to get to be able to see them. We had to travel out pretty far. These are interesting fractal patterns and they're made in the flats and they almost feel like sections of cobblestone or tile with raised grout that are in between them. And it's almost like these separate little islands or mosaic pieces of salt.
We meander a little bit more and keep looking for the moon to crest. Getting close, we thought, oh, let's just hang on for a few more minutes. It's going to happen. But unfortunately, based on timing and getting ourselves up in early, we had to make the call and turn around. We turn around, and it's a little gusty at this point. There were moments of wind, but it isn't terrible. And there are very few people on the basin at this point. And it does take us like a decent amount of time to walk back to the car, at least a half an hour, especially with the wind in our faces.
When we make our way back to the car, we change out of our boots and back into our sneakers as to minimize the salt in the front part of the car. This was sort of a losing battle, but we make it work to the best of our ability. And I very sleepily, although actually awake, drove us back to Furnace Creek along the windy road to the campground. We do get to catch some glimpses of the moon as we're driving, which did feel like a slap in the face here. And that being said, we did really have an excellent experience on the flats. And it is something I would absolutely recommend doing, even if you don't have moonlight, take a headlamp out.
We get back to the campsite and we see that a tent that was set up across from us had
been...
It was
a very tall tent.
Completely like picked up and moved and was just like in the bushes.
There was the car that was there earlier was not there. We just assumed...
I was like, did they abandon a tent? Maybe. I don't know.
We had no idea what happened to them. We assumed they'd found a hotel somehow and decided to stay there because the wind was...
Flash forward to the next day, we did see them breaking down the tent.
Yeah, we did.
And so they did come back for it.
Yeah.
But our tent that night was still intact. We did have to like shake out everything from the tent that night because it was full of sand.
Yeah.
The wind had taken sand and put it inside of the tent. So we did the best we could. And it was really fine sand, like really, really fine sand, like almost like flour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and it was everywhere. And we decided to sleep with the rain fly open or not with it off in the tent because we didn't want to get too hot. But that proved to...
just like werewolves impact our
literally
sleep.
I mean, it was like the full moon was over us. It was like sleeping in a room with a bright light on.
And with that, we know we can't fight the moonlight.
That's it. Okay, I think it is actually important to put the Salt Flats and Badwater Basin on the Karen Stone scale.
I think so too.
I'm going to give it a 2. And okay. I'm going to give it a 2 because of like what you're walking on. Because it is, you do have to look everywhere you're going to make sure that you're not like stepping into anything, or it could be ankle twisty perhaps.
Yeah, I would say the same, a 2, barring the wind. I think it is an extreme environment that you would have to, if you didn't have moonlight, have to have a headlamp for. It is relatively flat, but there are tripping hazards or ankle twisting hazards, so I think it's important that you really are careful when you're there. It's not for everybody, but it is something cool to do if you can. So
absolutely.
A 4 out of 20.
4 out of 20. And now let's...
2 out of 10 if we're reducing.
Yeah. Or 1 out of 5.
Or 1 out of 5.
Let's end this episode with some Jeopardy-style trivia.
Great.
All right, Mike. I'm going to get us started today.
Great. Take charge.
Are you ready?
I am.
So I was inspired by your moment of being photographed at an angle that you did not like.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me start thinking about angles. Mm-hmm. So this is an entire category on geometric angles. So you're just naming the geometric angle.
Great.
Are you ready?
I am.
Okay, so for 100. This type of angle that measures in at less than 90 degrees also sounds like the way one might describe a puppy or a kitten or a play that they just saw that they didn't care for.
What's a cute?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if someone sees a show I directed and they go, oh, it was cute,
mm-hmm.
insult.
If they say, it's a cute.
A cute, right. Mm-hmm. Okay, for 200, I guess you could have also described like a sharp, quick, one-time pain.
Mm-hmm.
A cute.
Yeah.
For 200, this type of angle measuring at 90 degrees is called this, the thing that Mike wants to be at all times and is often, but not every single time, even though he wants to be.
What is right?
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
That is right. Correct. Thank you for letting me know that I was mm-hmm. both right and
correct.
You are correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. For 300, if you are given an angle and asked to find the angle that would go with it to measure up to 180 degrees, that would be a supplementary angle. But if you were to do that only up to 90 degrees, that second angle would be considered this.
What?
Which sounds like how you would describe someone who is constantly praising others and pointing out things about others that they really like.
What's complimentary?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for 400, this type of angle that measures greater than 90 degrees also sounds like someone who is dense, dull, or dumb.
What's obtuse?
That is right. Mm-hmm. And finally, for 500, this type of angle is just a line straight up and down. But it also sounds like how one might describe freezing cold in Celsius.
What is a 0 degree angle?
That is correct. Okay. What is 0 degree angle?
Okay. Great.
Here you
Look
are.
At that. Me and my math skills.
You did it.
Great. So thank you for that. I was inspired by the term Badwater Basin.
Okay.
And where music where the phrase bad something
oh.
is a part of the music lyrics or
Got
the
it.
Song title.
I'm here for
so
that.
So I'm going to describe a song to you,
okay.
essentially, as though it was a landscape that is a basin, like a salt
oh,
flat.
Okay.
And you're going to need to tell me what that basin is.
Hats wearing hats.
Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
go.
Great. For 100, this barren basin is shockingly red in color due to the Earth's unusual wounding, almost akin to bullet holes that no Band-Aid could fix. While parts of this basin have shiny remnants left over from friendships past, most of them have gone and rusted at this point.
What is, 'cause baby, now we got bad blood.
Basin. Uh-huh. In Swiftwater National Park.
Oh, great. My God. Swiftwater National Park.
This is how this is going to go.
I like it.
Great.
Oh my God. Good job.
For 200, this barren basin has quite a reflective property to it based off of the volcanic activity and the obsidian deposits left behind. Staring into these black mirrors all across the basin initially makes you feel like the rough guy, the tough guy, the you can't get enough guy, until you truly take the time to reflect and realize you're not that good, actually.
Oh, God. I don't know.
In Eyelash National Park.
What are bad eyes? What are bad eyelash? What is bad mascara? I don't know.
So I couldn't really give you a term like Swiftwater, like giving it away. I have a national park name for each of these if I need to give you the hint.
Okay.
So eyelash is what this particular singer refers to her fans as. So think of what that sounds like as a name and then think of the song.
I have no idea. Maybe I'm
feel like you're the rough guy being all the tough guy.
No.
What is bad guy, Nash? Bad guy basin.
Oh.
Bad guy by Billie Eilish.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, clearly I don't know my Billie Eilish.
Apparently not. And
okay.
Nor do I really. I massacred that. So,
That's right. Okay.
Great.
Okay.
For 300, enter onto the barren landscape where old love letters, canceled plans, and lies, and the names of people you cheated on whisper around in the wind in Mother Monster National Park.
I see. Okay. So, my God, I'm going through the, what is Bad Romance National Park?
What is Bad Romance Basin?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. What is Bad Romance Basin?
Yeah, you got it. Great. Okay. This is a base for 400. This is a basin you probably don't want to spend much time in because the weather is quite unpredictable. Between potentially seismic activity, lightning, hurricane force winds a-blowing, flash flooding from rivers overflowing, there's always the possibility of being caught there at night once the sun goes down and it gets dark in Clearwater National Park.
Oh, is this like Creedence Clearwater Revival?
It is, but I'm looking for the song that would...
Hold on. Mm-hmm. It's not the And You Don't Mess Around With Slim song, is it?
No, when the sun goes down, what typically happens? What comes up?
What is Bad Moon Basin?
That's right.
Okay.
Bad Moon Rising. There you go.
Bad Moon Rising.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And for 500, if you truly don't care how you feel or appear in the eyes of others, your past, or whether you're a good girl or boy, you might be in this basin in Blackheart National Park.
I don't even know what Blackheart is. That's a band?
Well, it's a band with a lead singer who's a woman.
Is it? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know this answer at all.
The singer's Joan Jett. Can you give me the answer? Now,
Joan Jett
and the Blackhearts.
Oh, got it. Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
So
now
you
I know who
don't
Joan,
care
I,
about obvious. Your past, whether you're a good girl or a boy, or how you appear in the eyes of others. What might that refer to? Your what?
Your bad future. Your bad present. Your bad self.
What is bad reputation?
Oh, bad reputation.
Don't give a damn about my reputation.
I don't give a damn about my bad reputation. That.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that's
okay.
It.
Well, great. That was well done. A well done category, even if I didn't get all of them.
Even if you were bad.
That's it.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.